Week about a topic of what's called a ribui shiurim in mitzvahs, which is the concept of when a person performs a mitzvah once, whether or not there is a value in repeating that mitzvah and doing it over and over again. And this is a question that sometimes is relevant, sometimes is not relevant. For example, obviously when a person, you know, has a bris milah, that's a mitzvah you can only do once, you can't do twice. There's certain mitzvahs that can only be performed once. You build a fence around your rooftop, that's, you built it once. There's no building it twice and three times. But there are some mitzvahs that you can repeat. There is relevance to repeating it. And the question becomes whether there is significance to that and which applications are there. So one of the sources is the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Zayin Beis that we learned, where the Gemara tells us that Rava would be drinking on Erev Pesach, he would drink a lot of wine, because apparently the wine makes it whets the appetite, and when he gets to the Seder that evening, he'll be able to nechel matzah tfei l'orsa. That evening he'll eat more matzah. So there are two ways to understand this line, where it says nechel matzah tfei l'orsa. Tfei means more. One understanding of matzah, eating more matzah, could be he'll eat it in a better way, he'll eat it more exciting. He'll be more hungry for it. But the way the Avnei Nezer understands Nechel Matzah Tfei, to eat more matzah, means to eat more matzah, have more of it. So what does that mean, more of it? So the Avnei Nezer explains that even though you're Yotze B'Kazayis Echad, we know that you're supposed to have one Kazayis of matzah. So then, even though you're Yotze once, it's Choshev Mitzvah Masha Ochel Achar Kach, he writes. Every additional bite that you have is another Kiyum. We have to break it up. There's something called a Chiyum, and there's something called a Kiyum. There's some things that we have to do in this world, and there's some things that we are allowed to do. We may do it, and we have the option, and if we do it, we get a mitzvah. If we don't do it, we don't get a mitzvah, but there's no obligation. So for example, we all have a chiv to wear tefillin every single day. That's a chiv. But to wear tzitzis, there's no chiv to wear tzitzis. Unless you're wearing a dal kanfos, four-corner garment, there is no chiv to wear tzitzis. But if one were to wear tzitzis, you're mekayim a mitzvah. That's a ki mitzvah. Now, we were saying before about minyan. Minyan's not a chiv, per se. It's a lishtadel. But when one davens in a tzibur, in a minyan, you fulfill the mitzvah of tefillah with tzibur. So there's certain mitzvahs that are chiyuvim, and there's certain mitzvahs that are kiyumim. So even though a person is mechayiv in a certain mitzvah, and you fulfill the bare minimum, is there going to be additional kiyumim? So matzah, there's a mitzvah, there is a chiv. There's a chiv deraisa to eat a kazayis of matzah the first night of Pesach. So Avnei Nezer says, but even though you fulfilled your chiv, you have additional kiyumim, additional fulfillments each bite of matzah you take. Tefillin is another great example. My chiv of tefillin, all I have to do is wear tefillin and say Shema. That's all I have to do. That's my chiv. I could put it on, say Shema, and take it off. But there are additional kiyumim each moment that I wear it. So that's a chiv versus a Kim, and that's learned from this Gemara of Rava, who ate the matzah. He wanted to eat tfei, wanted to eat more matzah that evening. So Avnei Nezer says we have other examples as well. He says blowing shofar all day long. The Gemara says if a person wants to blow shofar all day long, he's allowed to, even though all you have to really blow is tkiya shvarim trua tkiya, and that is the chiv alone. So still, if one were to blow shofar all day long, you would have additional kiyumim that evening. He gives another example, lulav as well. Lulav, all you have to do to fulfill the chiv is to shake the dal minim, shake it once, pick it up, lift it up, and that's all the mitzvah. However, the Gemara says if you do shake it all day long, then you're getting additional kiyumim. So these are the examples of a chiv to do mitzvah, and then there's a kiyum on all the additional fulfillments. So we have another number of different examples to this concept here. The Gura famously writes that it's not only true of the first night, that every additional bite of matzah that you have a kim of the mitzvah, but the Gura writes, based on the Pasuk says, Shivas yamim tochul matzos. 7 days you should eat matzos. Now the simple understanding of that Pasuk is that, which means you shouldn't eat chametz. I mean, as long as I avoid chametz, I'm fine. Eating matzah means you don't eat chametz, don't have any iser. But not that I have to eat matzah, it just means don't have chametz. I could have potato starch if I want. I could have vegetables all week long, I'll be fine. But the Gra says, no, read the pasuk literally. It says, Shivas yamim tochlu matzahs. That for 7 days, you should be eating matzahs. So even though the Gra says the obligation, the chiv to eat matzah is only the first night and that first kazayas, each additional bite, not only on the first night, but every single day of Shivas Yimei Pesach, there's a kiyum, there's a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. That's what the Gra says. So there's actually a difference of the eating of the matzah of the night of Seder versus the eating of the matzah the rest of the week. Right? We all know the first chiyuv, that first bite of matzah, you have to have b'haseba. Gemara tells you have to lean to the left when you're eating that first bite of matzah. What about the additional eatings, the additional bites of matzah? So the Maharal says, on the first night of Pesach, all the additional eatings of matzah has to be done b'haseba as well. Not has to, but it should be done. Even though it's no longer chiv, I had my first kezayis, I fulfilled my obligation, so all the additional eatings on the first night should ideally be done b'haseba. However, all the rest of the eatings for the remainder of the week of Pesach, I don't have to, of course, do haseba. There's no concept of haseba during the week of Pesach, only on the first night. But these are examples of where there's a chiv to do something, but there are additional kiyumim, even though I fulfilled the mitzvah already. So the Mishnah Berurah has a suffix. This is all true with respect to eating matzah. But what about sukkahs? Do we have the same concept when it comes to sukkahs? Sukkahs, we know, the Mishnah tells us, that there is an obligation to eat a meal the first night of sukkahs. How do we know? The pasuk doesn't tell us this. So the Gemara tells us that there's a gzer shava tesvav tesvav, that Pesach is tesvav Nisan, and sukkahs is tesvav Tishrei, so we have a gzer shava. Just like there's a chiv to eat the first night of Pesach, a suda, so too there's a chiv to eat the first night of sukkahs. So that's the chiv. So the Gemara wants, the Mishnah Berurah wants to know, would the Gra say the same thing about the kiyumim of the additional days of sukkahs? I mean, do I have to eat in the sukkah at all? Or is it simply that I can't eat outside the sukkah? So everyone agrees if I'm having a meal on any day of sukkahs, I must eat in the sukkah. But is that a kiyum? Or is that simply avoiding an isser of eating outside the sukkah? So the Mishnah Berurah isn't sure. Would the Gra say, just like there's a fulfillment of a mitzvah, each bite of matzah I take during Shivas Yamim Tochel Matzahs, would I say the same thing by sukkahs? Is there a mitzvah each time I sit in the sukkah and I eat and I sleep and I hang out? Are those additional mitzvahs or not? He's not sure about that. But yeah, this is yet another place, another arena where we have this concept of a chiv and the additional fulfillments being a kiyum mitzvah. The Rambam says another example. It's interesting. Most of these examples surround the halachas of Pesach. The other example the Rambam brings is the mitzvah of Vigata Levincha. Pesach night, there's a mitzvah to speak about the story of Mitzrayim, the Haggadah. The Rambam goes to the various halachas. What is the bare minimum of what has to be said to fulfill your obligation? And the Rambam tells us that you have to lahaskel begnus l'sayim b'shvach, start with the bad, how things were avodim hayinu, how we ended with the geula, all the positive. And he gives that, you know, betchilu hayu avoseinu b'yimei terach, in the beginning, this times of terach, and Avram's father, we were over the avodah zarah. And then we went after avodah zarah, and then everything changed, and then we say avodim hayinu, and so on and so forth. And then we're Messiah, we conclude the Agadah, Benisim, Beniflos, all the miracles, the Eser Makos, and the Kriyas Yamsuf, and Dayenu, all that. That's how we conclude. And then the Rambam says, V'chol Mosif u'marich, Bidrash Parshazu, Arei Zeh Meshubach. So even though I've said what I needed to say, I said Matzazu, and I said Marazu, and Pesachzu, I go through describing all the nature of the mitzvahs. I spoke about the Gnus, and the Shevach, the Avodah Zarah, and the Gula, all that, I fulfill my mitzvah. Nonetheless, says the Rambam, the more you elaborate, Chol HaMosif u'marich, Harei Zeh Meshubach, that's praiseworthy, which seemingly tells us that those are additional kiyumim, those are additional fulfillments of the mitzvah. Meaning, although I fulfill the base mitzvah, the chiyuv, I could have continued fulfillment, even though I don't have to, after that fact. The Rambam says there's another example of this. The Rambam, a few halachas later, talks about the mitzvah of haseba. We know that a person has to do haseba. The first Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim tells us, afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyesef. Even an ani who may not have a home or may not have furniture, he has to somehow figure out how to lean to fulfill the mitzvah of haseba. An isha, a woman, the Rambam tells us, is pata from haseba. It's not her nature. Fine. And he goes through the various halachas, a child in front of the father, a student in front of the Rebbe, when one does do haseba, when one does not, or who does haseba, who doesn't do haseba. So then he says, when do you do haseba? At what points throughout the Seder should one have to do haseba? meaning when is the chiv have haseba? So the Rambam tells us, Eimasai tzrichin haseba, when does one need to lean? B'shas achilas kezayis matzah. When you eat that first haseba, that first eating of matzah, rather, the first kezayis, you need to lean. And if you don't lean, you have to eat it again. Haseba is essential to fulfillment of achilas matzah. And b'shtias arba kosos. And when drinking the four cups, you also must lean. They're essential to drinking. So what about the rest of the time? So the Rambam writes, even though the only chiv of haseba is during matzah and dalakosos, he writes, shar achilasa, v'shtiyasa, all the other eatings, all the other drinkings, im hesev, if you do decide to lean during the Shulchan Aruch, when you're eating the meal, you're having your soup, whatever you're eating, harei ze meshubach, that is praiseworthy, which sounds like, although you fulfilled your chiv, there are additional kiyumim after the fact. So this is the running theme we see throughout Pesach and perhaps Sukkot as well. Another example is found, we're now in Chodesh Adar, of course, which means Purim is just 6 weeks away. So what about Shalach Manos Matanos Lev Yonim? We know that there as well, there's a base, bare minimum of what you have to do, and then there's additional mitzvahs. So Shulchan Aruch Paskin is based on the Gemara, that the chiv of Shalach Manos is to send to your friend, Shnei Manos, Basar, Oshamini Ochlim, two items. I should point out that people don't know this. This is a side point just for a moment. Maybe we'll discuss this in the Sunday morning shir. But the people typically think that you have to have two brachas in Shalach Manos. That they have to, two minim have to be two different brachas. That is completely incorrect. They don't have to be two brachas at all. The example, the Shulchan Aruch says, Shnei Manos Basar, two types of meat. We say shahakol on both pieces of meat, whether it's a rib steak, whether it's a, I don't know, whatever, a hanger steak, chicken, it's all the same bracha. As long as they're two different types, that's all you have to satisfy. So two different types of foods, as it says in the pasuk, mishloach manos ish l're'ehu, and then shtei manos l'ish echad, and you have to give two gifts to evyon, matanos l'evyonim. Shach manos is one ish l're'ehu, two manos to one individual. Shtei manos l'ish echad. That's all the chiv. So you have one friend, your neighbor, you send them, a piece of meat and some wine, let's say, you fulfill the obligation. Although you fulfilled your chiv, chol hamarbe l'shloach l'reim mishubach. Those who increase the shalach manos, send to more friends, he's going to get additional kiyumim. So again, there's chiyuvim, and then there are kiyumim. Another example of this concept, there's many examples, but Rav Yosef Engel talks about Neres Chanukah. Neres Chanukah, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, daf chaf alf amud beis. That how long does the Shemin...
Is the Kiyum sending more portions to one person or two portions to more people?
more portions to one person. So the Levush actually thinks, it's more Shalach Manos to one person. Don't send two, send three, send four, send five. But the other post can argue on the Levush and says not true at all. That might be a Hidr Mitzvah. But in terms of additional Kiyum, and what it means, Chol HaMarbe means send to more friends, not send more gifts to one guy. We know the Gemara tells us in Shabbos Daf Chaf Aleph and Beis with Neres Chanukah that all the candle has to burn is for half an hour. You let it burn for half an hour and you fulfilled your mitzvah. If you want it to last longer, so there seems to be discussion in the poskim whether there's any value in that. Let's say a person wants to go out and they don't want to leave a candle unattended, so they have to go to some Chanukah party. So the halach is you could let it after half an hour burn out. Just blow it out before you go. And not leave it unattended. But the Rav Yosef Engel writes, even though you're allowed to put it out after 30 minutes, if you do let it burn for longer, there are additional kiyumim. You are fulfilling a mitzvah the longer it lasts. So there is an interesting discussion. I'm going to discuss this in just a moment. But is there a concept of a... one can raise the following shaila, the following chakira. When I fulfill additional mitzvahs, when I don't have to, but I decide to do it anyways, is that considered a hiddur mitzvah, or is that just additional kiyumim? So I shook the lulav, so that was my chiv, and now I'm holding it all day long. And my additional shakings of the lulav, are those hiddur mitzvahs, but really part of the same, my one mitzvah was just expanded to like a very big fat mitzvah up there, or no, they're additional, I get now 25 mitzvahs on one day. And now the very relevant point, because there's a din we're about to see, that when it comes to hiddur mitzvah only exists when you're actually doing the mitzvah. But you can't do hiddur mitzvah when you fulfill the mitzvah. What do I mean by this? So there's a Gemara in Shabbos that talks about performing a bris milah on Shabbos. So of course, we know that one does a bris milah on Shabbos. It says, B'yom HaShemini in Parshas Tazria. B'yom HaShemini, the Gemara says, Afilu B'Shabbos. When the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, it's we do the bris milah, and a few exceptions, unless the child was born Yotzei Dofen. If it was a C-section, if it was an unnatural birth, so then one does not do a bris milah on Shabbos. Another exception I'll just mention because it just came to my mind now. Let's say it was an unnatural conception. Let's say it was a IVF type of not birth, but the child was produced in such a way. So there's a discussion in the poskim. Some say if the child was born through created through IVF, that would be similar to Yotzei Dofen, even though one's on the creation stage and one's on the birth stage. Some contend that should not be Docha Shabbos either. But that's a larger discussion. Not for now, just giving you something to think about. Fine. But typical case, a eighth day bris milah on Shabbos is Docha Shabbos. Fine. So now when doing the bris milah, the Gemara talks about there's something called tzitzin ma'akvin, tzitzin she'en ma'akvin. If some of the arla, some of the foreskin is remaining, so if there's enough, sometimes there's too much of the tzitzin remaining, it's ma'akev, the fulfillment of the mitzvah. You haven't fulfilled your obligation yet. Too much is left over, so then the mo has to go back on Shabbos and fix it. He didn't do the mitzvah. But let's say there's some tzitzin that are remaining. They're not ma'akev. Not enough is remaining to fix the bris milah. So then you can't go back because you've already fulfilled the mitzvah on Shabbos. And just to make it more mehudr, tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin, you can't go back and fix it on Shabbos. It's a violation of Shabbos. So so there's a brisker rav about this based on the Rambam. So if we're saying you can't do a hiddur mitzvah on Shabbos, that violates Shabbos. You can't do tzitzin she'en ma'akvin. So how come when doing the bris milah initially, shouldn't I have to stop the moment I did what I needed to do? I'm the mo'el. So I'm cutting what I need to cut off, and I should stop whenever whenever I get to the point of tzitzin she'en ma'akvin, the point that I know at this point I fulfilled the milah, pull away, and then after Shabbos I could fix the remaining. Because the din is, once you're involved in a ma'isa mitzvah, the hiddur mitzvah is considered a continuation of that very mitzvah. So once the beginning of the bris milah, I'm allowed to be docha on Shabbos, I could continue that act and do the tzitzin she'en ma'akvin, because I'm still doing that same ma'isa. It's all viewed as a ma'isa that's docha Shabbos. But the moment I fulfill the mitzvah, and I moved away, and I want to go back now and fix it, that's no longer considered a hiddur mitzvah. It's not connected to the initial ma'isa mitzvah. So we have this din that a hiddur mitzvah is only a hiddur mitzvah if it's part and parcel of the actual mitzvah itself. But the moment you've stopped the mitzvah, to go back and do a hiddur won't help anymore. So therefore it's very relevant for this question of Neres Chanukah. Neres Chanukah, how do we view the nature of it letting it burn longer and longer? If we view it burning longer as a hiddur mitzvah, so if I extinguish the light because I want to go out to my Chanukah party, I come back home later on, if I relight it, if it was only a hiddur mitzvah, maybe the hiddur mitzvah is meaningless because I already fulfilled the mitzvah earlier. It's only hiddur when it's connected. But if you view the additional lighting as additional kiyumim, so then there would be a value in relighting it later on. So that's a very important discussion when it comes to these additional riboy shiurim when it comes to mitzvahs.
And what's the answer?
What's the answer?
Should you go back and relight it? I think the din is you don't, right?
I haven't looked into it enough. I'm not sure. I recall that seeing that the Mishnah Berurah says that one doesn't need to, but I seem to Libi Omer that there's a value in it nonetheless. There's a value, but I don't.
Make a bracha,
you would not exactly it. Definitely not say bracha exactly, but you would. I think there would be a value maybe, but I need to look back at it.
So we're saying if it was hider, you can't continue. If it's kiyum, you can continue.
Exactly right. That's seemingly what the machlokas would be based on. Exactly. So now take a look at the Yireim. The Yireim has a really interesting din here, which is very, very relevant halacha l'maaseh. Number 6. Yireim tells us, ubaharachas tkiyaso yose mikashir. Let's say there's a guy who's got a powerful, he's got strong, good lungs. He could hold his breath for a while. So he wants to have a very long tkiyah, a long tkiyah gedola. Ein bazeh chil yantif, kol zman shehu osik v'lo pirsh minat tkiyah. Exactly what we just said. If he's involved in that tekiah, So, you know, the tekiah has to be, let's just say, for argument's sake, 5 seconds long. That's a lot, but let's say 5 seconds long. So 5 seconds. So he can make it 15 seconds if he wants, because as long as he's osik in that tekiah, he can extend it as long as he wants. That's a hider mitzvah. But the moment you've stopped, lo pirish, but once you've stopped, no longer are you allowed to, because you fulfill the mitzvah. So if I blew a tekiah, my 5 second tekiah, I say, you know what? I want to do a 15-second tekiah now. You can't re-blow it just to make it a longer one this time because you already fulfilled your chiv. This second tekiah that you're blowing is unnecessary and becomes a violation of chilo yontif. And he gives this example of the milah case. You can't go back and fix it if you already fulfilled the bare minimum mitzvah of the milah. So he says, therefore, if a person, let's say, he gives another example. Let's say a guy gave a very schwach tekiah. But it was a good tekiah. It was a good yotzeh, but it wasn't very strong. He wants to go back and bring a strong tekiah, tekiah chazak, says the Yerem. He says, once a person blew it once, you can't go back and make it more mehudr. So what's the relevance? So how does this impact us? Not, most of us are not balei tekiah here. So what do you do? In the following situation. Let's say a person, there's a din Pesach night, to eat zehidr, to eat the matzah, all of it bebas achas, which means to crush all the matzah up in your mouth and try to swallow it in one swallow. It's very hard to do. You chew and you chew, you chew, and then you swallow it all at once. There's such an Indian in the post. So let's say I ate the kazayas first. I was eating it and chewing and then swallowing, chewing, swallowing, chewing, swallowing. I had it within the few minutes I need to have it. But I didn't have them all in one bas achas, all one swallowing. Is there value, if I ate it the first time, when I chewed, swallowed, is there value of doing it a second time, bivas achas? I wanted this time try it. It's a lot of matzah, of course, but let's say a guy wants to do this. So the Minchas Asher discusses this, and he quotes Mechelkas Yoav and says, once you've fulfilled a mitzvah, there is no value in going back and fulfilling it in a better way. Now, we've been discussing of fulfilling it additional times in terms of kamas. How many times you do a mitzvah over and over again? You want to eat more matzah to do more times. But to fulfill it in a better way, he says there is no value in fulfilling it a better way. You already got that check mark. So he gives a couple of examples where we see you can't redo a mitzvah once you fulfilled it once. So what's the case? There's a rivash. Rivash was asked the shaila, if a person, let's say, married his wife, kedushin, we know kedushin, can be performed ayde shlichus. You could send the shliach, I want to get married to a girl, I send the shliach, please marry her on my behalf. Great. So, but the problem is, the Gemara says, mitzvah bo, yosem b'shlucho. It's better for me to do the mitzvah kedushin than send the shliach. So I married Rach, my wife's name is Rachel Sarah, so I married Rachel Sarah through shlichus. So you know what? I'd rather marry her in the better way, mitzvah bo, yosem b'shlucho. So could I remarry her myself and give her the kesef as opposed to my shliach? So the Rivash says, of course not. You already married her once. You can't now marry her in a better way. You already married her. It doesn't work. So that's one raya. He says, once you ate matzah, even though it wasn't the most ideal way, but you ate the matzah and the kezias, there's no value in re-eating the matzah in bevas achas. Second raya, the Chelkas Yoav brings, is a guy violated a chatas. We know that when do you bring a carbon chatas? A person violated an isser. That if that iser, if it were done b'mezid, you get kares. So if you do it b'shogeg, you would bring a chatas. So for example, Shabbos. Shabbos, the person violated Shabbos. So if he was warned, edim hasra, don't do that, don't carry outside, there's no eruv. So then there's edim hasra, he gets skil. Let's say there are no edim hasra, but he did it b'mezid, he would get kares. That's a mitzvah, an iser where there's kares. If he were to carry b'shogeg, he was unaware of Shabbos, he didn't know about the air, whatever the case is, that person brings a chatas. A chatas is always parallel whenever it b'meis its karis, so then the shogeg is chatas. So let's say a person, Ruvain violates a Shabbos, b'shogeg. He brings a chatas, he brings a very small animal, very weak-looking animal, it's cheap. He brings a chatas, and I said, you know what? He made a lot of money this week. He says, I want to re-bring that chatas. I want to bring a shmena, fat chatas, with fat dripping on the mizbeach. A much more mehudr type of chatas. Is there a value in doing that? And the answer is, says the Chelkas Yoav, of course not. Once you were yotze your chatas once, you can't bring a second chatas. I can't make a neder that I want to bring a chatas to the base of Mikdash. If I'm chayv a chatas, I must bring one. If I'm not chayv a chatas, I may not bring one. So once I brought my chatas, although it wasn't a very nice, juicy animal I brought, but I still checked the box, I can't bring another one. So So says the Chagas Yov, so too, if you fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, even though it wasn't the most ideal way, you were chewing, swallowing, you weren't swallowing in b'mas achas, but still, you fulfill the mitzvah, there is no value in going back to repeat the mitzvah. That's the din of the Chagas Yov. So Ashiwai says, there's a difference though. There's a difference between the examples, the proofs of the Rivash, and the case of eating matzah. By the case of Kedushin, there's certain mitzvahs that you do the mitzvah once, it's over. You do a bris milah once, it's over. There's no doing a mitzvah milah twice. You get married to the same girl, you can't marry her twice. It's over. There's nothing about talking about. You bring a chatas, it's over. But by matzah, as we've been learning, there's an additional value, more kizasim that you eat, there's a value in that. So whenever there's an opportunity where you could do ribuy of the same mitzvah, so then yes, you could go back and eat the matzah in a more mehudadik way. Same thing with an eser. Well, I was once at a place where there's a guy, use bad names, but he was a guy who, you know, grew up like me, but wanted to be more frum than everyone else. So he was going around to asking for everyone's lulav and eser to make sure he's got the best, give me your matana to shake the lulav. Maybe your eser is better than my eser. Maybe mine's, a hybrid, it's a crossbreed, it's not really an eser. He went around the base medrash making sure he shook everyone's lulav and eser. Okay, fine. So let's say a guy shook the lulav once, and then he saw the rabbi's beautiful esrog. Now, growing up in Teaneck, so there was a family around the corner, the name was Rosenberg. So the grandfather, it's actually Fagin here. It's Gabriel and Robert Fagin's grandfather. This was his grandfather, Rosenberg. The mother, Fagin, is she's a Rosenberg. That's her maiden name. So Rosenberg's a family from Yeki. From the Breuers. So this grandfather, he was given the second pick for lulav and esrog in the Breuer community. The Rav was given the first pick, and he was the second pick. So I remember the first time I didn't know this, so I asked, his name is Alan Rosenberg, he had a minyan in his house, we dive in there. So I had asked him, how does his father get such a beautiful lulav and esrog? So he told me that his father gets the second round draft pick of the of all the lulav and esrogim in Breuers. So it was the most beautiful lulav and esrog I've ever seen. Each year is more beautiful than the next. So let's say I already took my very decent lulav and esrog and I shook it. I yotei the mitzvah. Is there value to now get a clearly more mehoder lulav and esrog to shake that as well? So according to Chagas Yov, he says, no, once you fulfill the mitzvah once, there's no additional value. Once you marry your wife once through shlichus, there's no value in marrying her, yosem b'shlucho. You already married her once. Once you brought the chatas, there's no value in bringing a chatas shemena. But according to this understanding, that's not true. Whenever you have a concept of there are additional kiyumim, I could shake lulav all day long, even though I fulfill the mitzvah the first thing in the morning by picking it up and shaking it, I can still fulfill additional kiyumim. In that case, there would be a value of bringing something that is, in fact, more mehoder than the previous case. I'll finish with one last din here. Just interesting suffix that the Brisker Rav Chaim Brisker rather discussed related to that which is more mahudr and that which isn't mahudr. So he raised the following shaila. It relates to what we were talking about: whether there's a hiddur only b'shas ma'isa while doing the mitzvah, or could there be a hiddur even when you've already completed the mitzvah? So he was dealing with a shaila. Let's say a person has a an esog. That's suffik, whether or not it's murkav. What does murkav mean? Murkav is grafted. That many times throughout history, different mochim took the esrogim and grafted them with lemons, because lemons have less psulim, they're much prettier. So we don't really know, you don't have a mesorah of what's considered a true esrog, a pure esrog versus not. The way it's described in Midrashim, our esrogim don't seem to be correct. The Yemenite esrogim seem to be really in line with how the Midrashim discuss it. Our esrogim are not edible, that's number one. The Yemenite esrogim, the big ones, are edible. Ephraim Nudman gets them each year. The way the seeds are inside, there's a whole thing about what the esrogim should look like, and that's really mamash what the Yemenites have. That being said, I'm not going to be moti laz on our mesorah. We have a tradition that this is what we use. Fine. But there's still a chashash that different esrogim were grafted with lemons. There's a mice that once the Chazon Ish was walking in Eretz Yisrael and he saw like an esek tree and he said, oh, that's like the esek tree that has a part of the Masorah. How he knew this? A Chazon Ish. So Talmidim ran over, they took the esrogim and they planted all these orchards of esrogim trees. That's how we have these Chazon Ish esrogim. You buy a Chazon Ish special esrog. Now some of them are from the initial Talmidim, some of them who use an esrog that last year I bought a Chazon Ish esrog. So I could take the seeds now and build my own orchard, plant my own orchard, that could also be a Chazon Ish type of esrog. So that's what a Chazon Ish esrog is. It's based on this Mesorah of the Chazon Ish recognizing that these were not grafted at all. So let's say you buy from a place that you don't know if it's grafted. It doesn't have that stamp of approval from the Chazon Ish. It's a Safek. So I've got a Safek Murkav. And but it's very mahudah, it's beautiful. But I don't have that stamp of approval. And then I've got an esog from the Chazon Ish esog. Let's assume that's a mamish of frivadai, not murkav. But it's not so mahudah, it's ugly, it's a strange shape to it, it's got some scratches on it, it doesn't make it psul, but it doesn't look very nice. So is it better to make the bracha on the more mahudah one, though there's a suffix whether it's grafted, or maybe the vadai esog, even though it's not very mahudah? So Chaim said that a person should first say bracha on the mahudr one, even though it's not necessary at esrog, even though it might be grafted with a lemon, say the bracha on the mahudr one first. And if you're makayim, if it's a kosher one, beautiful, you're makayim, this mitzvah on the hiddur. And if it's pasul, okay, so then the moment later you'll say the bracha, you'll shake the next one. Because what happens the opposite order? Let's say I first take the one that's vade kosher. I take the chazon ish one that's kosher. And it's not pretty. It's a strange, oddly shaped. Once I'm a kind of mitzvah, there is no value anymore, says the Chazon Ish, says the Rav Chaim, to shake the Hoda one afterwards. Right? Because he says, once you fulfill the mitzvah is done, on that chevs of the Esrog, there's no value of getting another more Mahuda one later on.
The other one's questionable.
So if the one's questionable, so if I didn't get the mitzvah, if I got the mitzvah for the first one that's questionable, if it's a good esrog, so I got the esrog with the hiddur. And if it's puzzle, okay, so it's not a mitzvah, it's nothing. But right afterwards, I'll do the vada esrog without the hiddur. But the other way around again, if I take the ugly esrog, but that's a vada esrog, I shake it, that's my mitzvah, it's complete. And if I try to take the more mahudr one later on, it doesn't work anymore because I already was yotzei the mitzvah. But according to what we're suggesting, what Rav Asher Weiss is suggesting, that whenever you have a mitzvah, that there's a concept of additional kiyumim, you could fulfill lulav and esrog all day long if you want, even though you don't have to, you still can. There would seemingly still be a value in shaking a more mahudr lulav and esrog later on. Granted, I fulfilled the mitzvah earlier with the Chazon Ish that didn't look very nice, but it was still a vaday esrog. I got the mitzvah. But each time I shake it, I get additional cumim, and seemingly you would get additional hidurim as well.
The rabbi comment on the words of adding. How do you know you're not adding to a mitzvah? What's the definition of that?
What do you mean by that?
Baltosef. How do we know it's not Baltosef in all these cases?
Oh, in terms of Baltosef, okay.
How do we even...
No, Baal Tosef is it's a different discussion, of course, and Rosh Hashanah talks about this. Baal Tosef is when you are adding on to a cheftza shel mitzvah, the actual mitzvah itself. If I were to take a fifth min, Baal Tosef isn't additional times. It's additional, you're changing the tzur, the cheftza. So to take a fifth min, to add a fifth corner of tzitzis, to add a fifth parsha tefillin, that's where there's Baal Tosef. You do have some examples, though, you know, additional days also. So, exactly, sukkahs. To sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres, that would be an additional day on the Tzurah. But to do additional times of the day, let's say a Kohen who did Birchas Kohanim once, the Gemara says, he's allowed to do it multiple times throughout the day because it's the same mitzvah, just repeating the same mitzvah. Repeating the same mitzvah is fine, but changing the Tzurah of the mitzvah, that's when there is a violation. Okay, so we'll stop here. Mitzvah Hashem will continue next week. I'll be here. I hope to be here next week in the morning as well.